Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There's Mike Bloomberg, the businessman, Mike Bloomberg, the philanthropist, and Mike Bloomberg, the mayor. All had very busy days yesterday. I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. The market has been up and down this morning on the heels of a better-than-expected jobs report. We'll have the latest and a look at the swirling conversation about the Dow, jobs, double dips, and the Eurozone in about 30 minutes. But for now, let's take a deep breath and step away from watching the stock market. Because Bloomberg, the investor, didn't just lose money yesterday as the Dow dropped 500 points. Bloomberg, the philanthropist, also spent some serious money. Two announcements. One, the mayor is kicking in $30 million towards the $130 million Young Men's Initiative, a new city program aimed at New York's 315,000 Black and Latino men between the ages of 16 and 24. The goal is to increase graduation and employment rates and keep young Blacks and Latinos out of prison. Two, the mayor was among several philanthropists who donated money to administer the New York State Regents exam. The Board of Regents had voted to eliminate the January exam because of budget cuts. Bloomberg and several others chipped in $250,000 each this week to save the tests for 1 year. Meanwhile, the city and state continue to cut their budgets. So what does it mean when the Bloomberg administration cuts public budgets on the one hand and Bloomberg, the philanthropist, puts in private funds on some of the same problems on the other? And what happens when New York City no longer has a billionaire mayor? With us now is Joyce Pernick, WNYC political analyst and author of the biography Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, and Politics. Joyce, welcome back to the show.
Hi, nice to be with you.
So let's talk about none of those things for 1 second. Let's start with Bloomberg, the mayor. Yesterday saw the loss of Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith after just about 15 months on the job. Goldsmith was the former mayor of Indianapolis, as you know, and he was brought in with much fanfare. But now he's out. He said that he just told the mayor this week. Are you surprised by this?
No. I mean, I think his days were numbered, and he was inevitably going to be invited to leave, which is what I suspect happened, after he mishandled the terrible snowstorm the past season.
So was it just, let's sort of wait around till August and there's enough time passed and people are not really thinking about snow? Is that what happened here?
Well, no chief executive likes to let someone go in the middle of publicity. No chief executive, whether it's in business or in government, wants to be seen as sort of being dictated to by public opinion. So, yeah, I think that's part of it. And there was general disaffection with him within the administration. It had been going on for quite some time. The feeling was that he just wasn't connected very well to New York City, didn't understand New York City very well, was too much of an academician, and spent a lot of time in Washington as opposed to New York. Just recently got a place to live here. So I think this was inevitable.
Why do you think it was? That, I mean, he was sort of brought in as the guy who could really run things, the former mayor of Indianapolis, and somebody who had made things work. Why do you think that was such a hard task for him?
All right. Let's try again.
Hi. I'm sorry. Did you hear that question?
No.
I was wondering why, you thought that was such, there was such a disconnect here. I mean, he was somebody who was supposed to be able to sort of, he was a Harvard professor.
Yeah.
and but also somebody who had been a mayor and somebody who had made things happen.
Well, he was mayor of Indianapolis. He was not mayor of New York City or a city anything like New York. Indianapolis is very small compared to New York City. It doesn't have the diversity New York City has. It's a very different profile. I think this was a case similar to what's going on now, where and similar with Kathy Black, where the mayor, this mayor, Mike Bloomberg, likes to make these bold moves. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. In this case, it just didn't. He became enamored of the idea of bringing in an outsider who is going to show the standard employees of New York City how things really can be done. And as I said, sometimes it works, but often, more often, it does not. New York City is a complicated city with a complicated government. Didn't work with Kathy Black at the school system, and it didn't work with Stephen Goldsmith. They were both mistakes.
Let's listen to a little clip of Goldsmith on this show with Brian last November. Take a listen.
Look, and this is the assignment the mayor gave to me, which is that we want to keep up the quality of services at the same time we operate inside our budget. And to the extent that we have too many supervisors or the supervisor spans of control can be enlarged, that's what we're trying to do in the sanitation department, and so that the basic services stay in place and we kind of smooth out those supervisory areas. So we're trying to do many of those things across government.
Do you think that his assignment was too nebulous?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that his approach didn't take into account the sensitivities of workers and union leaders. I mean, you have to be able to work with those people, and to sort of come in and make these kinds of announcements broad brush didn't work very well.
All right, let's sort of move on to the mayor's poverty initiative yesterday, where he announced that not only was there going to be a city program to target Black and Latino men, but that his philanthropy was going to donate a pretty hefty sum. And not only that, that he had gone to George Soros and said to George Soros, I'm giving $30 million to this, will you match it? And George Soros said yes. So here we have this very interesting phenomenon, A, where the mayor is sort of saying, I'm going to, you know, target a specific population in this way to try to bring them out of poverty, and B, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is.
Right.
So let's start sort of first with the poverty initiative piece. Do you think that's going to work? And do you think, I mean, it sort of, you know, was billed in the Times and elsewhere as sort of one of the biggest policy initiatives of his third term?
Is it going to work? It's almost impossible to determine that before it's even begun. There are a number of experts in the field who think that you have to focus on people, young people, when they're very young, as you know, hence the Head Start program and similar programs. Whether you can intervene when they're 16 and over and try to turn their lives around is a question. I think it's admirable that he's going to try. I don't think anyone can criticize the fact that he's willing to put his money where his mouth is. It just raises a lot of questions about sort of the nexus between governing and private wealth.
On the other hand, I mean, you know, it's sort of interesting because I've certainly heard a lot, and I'm sure you have. The mayor, you know, he's got so much money. Why doesn't he put his money into solving some of these problems? Now he seems to be moving to do it. I mean, there was not only the Regents exam announcement, but there was an announcement earlier this summer that he was going to be giving $50 million to the Sierra Club, or his philanthropies were, to try to bring about clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to, I mean, is this because he's sort of looking at what is next, or is it because he sort of sees, you know, there is no money in government right now, and if I don't show the way on this, no one will?
Well, you know, he's been doing this consistently since he, on a smaller scale, since he's been mayor, right? He was giving money allegedly anonymously, but everybody learned, through the Carnegie Corporation, first to cultural institutions and then social service organizations as well, all through his first and second term. He's also helped finance and raise money for pilot projects dealing with poverty, dealing with incentives in the Department of Education. You may remember that. So this is very, very consistent. Andrea, I think part of what's going on is this is sort of an audience preview post-Mayor Mike Bloomberg and what we're going to be seeing from him once he leaves office. He's got 2 years left. He's got another chapter, at least, in his professional life. And I think he's trying to figure out how he's going to use his money and his time.
We want to take some calls from listeners. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Joyce Pernick, WNYC political analyst and author of Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, Politics. We'll take your calls at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Joyce, I wanted to ask you before we go to the phones, mm-hmm. sort of this question, which sort of seems to be kind of left hanging in all of the stories. What happens when the next mayor doesn't do this? And, you know, I sort of guess one of the pushbacks is, you know, does that matter? I mean, if you didn't have the mayor stepping in as a philanthropist at the same time he was, you know, stepping in as mayor, mm-hmm. then it seems that there would just be less money spent on the problem.
Well, I guess we go back to normal, right? I don't see any other route. I think that unless we keep electing multi-billionaires, I don't think anything else is going to happen other than going back to government as usual. And we'll look back on this as sort of an unusual chapter in New York City's history.
All right, let's take some calls. Fabio from Manhattan. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I'm a huge fan of the mayor. I've been a fan since he came in, and I disagree with a lot of stuff, like first with the bike lanes, but I gave it a chance. The whole black and education, which is a bad mistake to begin with. But in the end, I think everyone will agree with me that he's going to be remembered up there with LaGuardia and many other great mayors because he has dedicated so much. I mean, just the fact that he doesn't even get paid just because he doesn't really need it. How many politicians have you seen him do that, even the millionaire ones?
All right. Thanks for your call, Fabio. Joyce, what about that? I mean, is the mayor just sort of, one argument is that he's trying to lead by example. He's trying to say to, wealthy people, mm-hmm. step in, do your part.
Right. He is. And he's in a position to do that. These are the people that he knows well, the people that he socializes with. You have to praise the initiative. I also wonder, however, if that gentleman or others in New York have considered the issue of conflicts of interest, which I think also exist here, where people who get money from the mayor, whether they're their cultural institutions, people who work in education, then are hesitant to criticize him and become cheerleaders. It's not the worst thing to cheerlead someone about, correct, if you forgive my grammar, but it does raise interesting questions. And in fact, when he was lobbying to change the law so he could run for a third term, some of the people who had received some of his largesse testified before the city council on his behalf. They may have, anyway, that's what his people said, but it does raise an interesting question for people to consider.
We have reported on WNYC extensively about the Stop and Frisk program and about people, particularly young black and Latino men, getting arrested for possession of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they told our reporter, Elsa Chang, that, essentially the police did a maneuver where they sort of, got them to empty their pockets, which they're not actually supposed to do.
Right.
And I'm wondering whether there is a contradiction between that program, which is also happening under Mayor Bloomberg, and a program to sort of redirect black and Latino men after they have been arrested. And one of the things that his address pointed out is that it's this very arrest records that are barriers to employment.
Yeah, well, I think he would say one has nothing to do with the other. He believes that these detentions and arrests and stop and frisks have a deterrent effect. But I think there's something of a contradiction. There's also a contradiction, Andrea, in the fact that he opposes raising taxes even on the wealthy on a national level, right? Theoretically, right, you would have more money coming into government to be spent on programs if taxes on the wealthy were raised. He opposes that, yet at the same time he's willing to spend some of his own money raise money from other wealthy, matching money from the Soroses of the world to spend money on programs. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you want to call that a contradiction, but it's not exactly direct. The thinking doesn't seem directly linked to me, if you know what I mean.
All right, let's take some more calls. Mr. Cam from New Rochelle. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning. In Sweden, charity is banned. It's considered immoral. The government has a responsibility to do things, and the government does it. The recipients, if it's a worthwhile program, need to have this as a right. We don't depend on millionaires and billionaires, as your guest mentioned, to solve our problems. The government has a right to do it, has the obligation to do it. It's an entitlement that people have, not something they should be grateful for. So we've got the morality wrong, and we have the libertarianism wrong. The values of the marketplace cannot do this. And calling people customers, as the mayor tries to get people to do, and I think this man from Indianapolis colluded in, is simply the wrong template altogether.
All right. Thank you for your call. I'm going to go right to another caller, Paul from Port Washington, who I think has another view. Hi, Paul. You're on WNYC.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very enthusiastic when super wealthy people like Bloomberg and Soros direct their assets towards things for the public good. I'm not a fan of increased taxation because I think that wealthy individuals, although I'm not one of them myself, do a much better job of using their wealth in these areas. Whenever the government gets involved, there's waste, there's fraud, there's all manner of things that that are negative. But I think that with it widely accepted that 1% of the national population, that's 3.1 million people, control 50% of the wealth, there should be some kind of emphasis and force, some pressure is the word I'm looking for, on wealthy people to do what's right, to do what is actually patriotic, instead of paying $1,500 for a pair of shoes like that woman who was highly publicized yesterday.
So, I think we get the point. Joyce Pernick, we have two views. We have one sort of, yes, wealthy people, you know, should go ahead and pay for this. They've got the money. Mm-hmm. Why not? And we've got, you know, if wealthy people are going to do this, people are going to stop seeing this as a government responsibility. And I wonder, you know, sort of if this is part of what has brought us to where we are today, is this, you know, sort of constant call for the private sector and private individuals to step up, has that contributed to a sense of, you know, government is not the one that should properly be doing these things?
Well, I know when I was growing up, it's a while ago, the mechanism for getting wealthy people to help government was called taxation. I don't know when we lost that method, but it used to be. Remember, Andrea?
I do remember that.
And then government would spend them on other people. Now, I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but the idea that the wealthy should not pay higher taxes, but then they should contribute their money to programs, the logic eludes me. I just wanted to say one other thing to that last caller. The idea that government messes things up and the private sector doesn't, he hasn't been doing his homework, because, in fact, one of the larger scandals, and there haven't been many during the Bloomberg administration, involves contracting out, right, to private sources to run programs. And it hasn't worked very well in all cases. There's just as much waste, red tape, and corruption in the private sector as there is in the public sector.
In some cases
more. So that's not the answer. The answer is better management and better oversight.
You're referring to the City Time scandal.
Exactly right. Yeah. And the City Time program.
The City Time program, I mean, Goldsmith sort of ended up taking that over on his, you know, sort of portfolio. I mean, did that have anything to do with his departure, or was that something that sort of happened before he came?
I think it actually started before he took it over, but can't hold me to that. I haven't watched the dates that closely. That was just one of his responsibilities, and I don't think he was there at the beginning.
We have a comment on our Facebook page from Spence, who writes, "This is a serious issue. Too many nonprofit advocates clammed up after receiving money from Bloomberg." We were touching on that earlier with respect to the issue of the third term. I was going to say fourth term.
That's right.
I don't think we're there. But is that something that you think? I mean, is there evidence for that? Do we know that that's the case?
Well, in that instance, we certainly know that people, is that what you're asking? We certainly know that people who were the heads of organizations that got some of Bloomberg's money did testify in his favor. Now, you know, I think they're very fond of him, and they might have anyway. So I don't know if you could say that there is evidence. I think we should also point out that, you know, when the mayor is not a billionaire, pressure comes from lobbying groups, right, who want favors from government. So there's no pristine, perfect system. There's always going to be questions about conflict.
Right. As you point out, it's been a little boring for those of us who like to read campaign finance records, because we've had nothing to look at with Mayor Bloomberg for the last 11 years.
Exactly right.
So, you know, there is, I mean, it's an interesting thing, because I remember when he ran for mayor first time around, there was a lot of discussion of I am not, you know, I can't be bought because I've bought myself, essentially.
And it's true. I don't think it can be. But there are other questions. I mean, I've said about this many times that his giving, his charitable giving, does good, and it also does him good, and I think both are true.
All right. Well, you mentioned and I'm going to have to wrap it up here, but you mentioned that this is sort of a preview of post Mayor Bloomberg of the sort of next chapter in his life. Are we going to be seeing, I mean, he's still got, you know, it's 2011. He's going to be mayor through 2013. Do you think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this?
I suspect we will. I think that, that one of the reasons that he contemplated running for president and then instead pushed for a third term is that he enjoys the platform. He likes to be able to influence policy. He likes the attention, not merely for ego gratification, although I think that's part of it, but because he does believe that he can use his platform to get things done. And I think that he looks ahead and sees his term ending in about 2 years. He's saying, what am I going to do next? How am I going to have an influence? And I think if he can kind of set a marker now and show the public how he can leverage his money to influence policy, then he can hope that even when he no longer has the title mayor, mayor is his first name, he will still have an influence on policy if he continues to spend his money in the public sector the way he is doing and has been doing for quite some time.
I think his first name will always be mayor. Thanks so much, Joyce Pernick, who is a WNYC political analyst and the author of the biography, Mike Bloomberg, Money, Power, and Politics.
Thank you so much, Andrea,
for joining us. And in just a moment, we'll be talking about the presidential campaign. Do you know what the various Republican candidates said about the debt? We'll find out right after this.